Hello and welcome to The Indoorsman, your podcast guide to the great indoors. I am your partially packed host, Matt.
And I am staying in Adelaide, Cliff.
It's true. Cliff is staying in Adelaide. Big news. We didn't want to announce it too soon, but this is a thing that's happening and was already happening and will continue to happen.
Well, if I move, then I won't get to play any more D&D.
That's true.
Unlucky.
It's true. So yes, I have spent the last infinity amount of time packing up my life, getting rid of all my stuff, because I have a lot of stuff. I've lived in open plan, no space limit housing for the last couple of years. I have a lot of crap.
That does happen.
Get rid of a lot of crap.
You accumulate stuff so quickly, if you allow yourself to.
Plus, as a kid, up until the age of 13... we moved interstate every 2 years, being an Air Force family, so there was a very kind of mercenary attitude to offloading stuff. So when I sort of found a permanent home here in Adelaide, I think as a sort of unconscious rebellion, I just started like pack ratting and keeping everything, which was great up until now. So I have to get rid of a lot of stuff. I think I've honestly gotten rid of more stuff than I've actually packed.
That doesn't surprise me.
Strangely liberating. Also, some of those things have been exchanged for money. Did you know if you give people stuff that you own, they'll give you money in return? It's wicked.
Depends on the stuff.
It's true. Some of this stuff was not worth much, but it was worth more to me in pittances than it was in extra boxes I have to carry.
Get rid of everything.
Yeah, pretty much. So many things. And then I look to the left of my microphone and see a giant pile of amiibo that I still have to decide if I want to stick to my guns on that one.
Get rid of them and buy the little cards instead.
They don't have little cards.
So you haven't been to eBay then, have you?
I see. I've looked into trying to find like a NFC read-write chip to do this, but apparently the amiibos are hard to do or something.
No, the people have been selling them for like a few bucks on eBay. You just buy the pre-programmed ones. Like a buck or two. It's like a big thing because the guys do it because Nintendo are dumb when it comes to producing the right amounts of things. And so some of them get in short stock and they take them. The people that, while you don't need these things to play, tons of games add in extra stuff to the game. And that, so people just like, screw it, we'll just like produce a million of these cards so everyone can actually get access to these things that add into games and you can then use.
Yeah, I mean, Nintendo have definitely gotten better on producing like the amount of stock they need compared to, yeah, the dark days of the first year of Amiibo where it seemed like they made two of every model. And I think the first game I've ever seen that actually required Amiibo to unlock something more than cosmetic bullshit was Metroid Samus Returns, which I reviewed a couple of weeks ago. Where the hard mode was locked behind one of the amiibos, like the super hard mode. Yeah, so I might at the very least, the statues are pretty. So I might keep some of the essentials.
That's
and
how they get you.
It is how they get you. I'm not arguing with that.
You've got too many statues. I can still see statues behind you that you need to either pack or get rid of.
Dude, that's going to be like two boxes and half of the box is going to be friggin' bubble wrap. But anyway, that's enough about my pack life. Let's talk about nerd shit. Cliff, what have you been playing this week?
I've been playing a few things. I went back and played some more Ruiner. This time I did not use my controller. I used mouse and keyboard. And it was infinitely better playable with the mouse and keyboard. Yep, I preferred it massively over the stick. The stick's just not fast enough for me for the twitch movement. I don't like it. Considering that you can point roughly in a general direction and completely miss the thing that's right in front of you because you didn't get just the right angle on it. So being a mouse and keyboard, PC Master Race kind of guy, it is so much faster and easier to actually shoot enemies in that game now with a mouse and keyboard.
See, that's really interesting because a friend of mine, David Rayfield, reviewed the game for GameSpot and actually had the exact opposite opinion, saying that even though he played it on PC, he vastly preferred controller despite being a generally PC guy. Because the keyboard and mouse just didn't feel intuitive.
I think it feels more intuitive to me with a keyboard and mouse to do it.
Fair enough.
So, yeah, I don't know. It's just a personal preference down to controls thing. I just don't find the stick in any game discriminating enough, quickly enough anyway.
Mm.
And most games consoles have like an auto lock or like they have auto aim assist to help you with that. But when you're playing a game on PC, it doesn't have that, even though you have a controller. So it's just like, yeah, just toss that out. I'll just use mouse and keyboard.
Yeah, Ruiner, like playing it on PS4, I did find that kind of the spin on the right stick felt a bit slow compared to what I would want it to be. But I actually need to look and see if there's a sensitivity control I can up, because that could be the only thing holding me back.
So I played some of that, then, you know, that's good fun. Cruising through, smashing the shit out of various gangs and whatnot. What else have I played? I played some Battlefront 2 beta.
Oh, yeah.
I quite liked that. I thought it was good. One of my friends three of us were playing at the same time, went into a game. He played for 2 minutes and said, nah, that's it. I'm uninstalling it. Quit. Uninstalled it. And I'm said, dude, you played like 2 minutes of a mode in this game. And you're like, nah, I don't like it. I like the first one, I don't like this one. It's like, all right, you didn't actually really play it at all to form that decision. But, you know, cool, whatever, you don't have to get it. I probably won't get it, even though I quite enjoyed it. Just because it's just yet another game to play. So I played that, but it is very, very good. It's extremely pretty. It was great, great fun. But, it's just there's too many games coming out this time of year to spend money on that. I'll pick it up if it's still actually going, because in the first one, the PC community died instantly. And so no one was playing, because people were just like, oh, this game, it's not great. And so people just went like, oh, yeah, won't play anymore. And the PC community died, so it's hard to get in games. If the PC community is actually going all right, I might pick it up. But, yeah, plus it's got single player, so you can always play that down the road sometime.
Yeah, that's so. The big step. Like, I was only vaguely interested in Star Wars games beyond, you know, the really good Jedi Academy stuff back in the day. But the moment I found out Battlefront had no story mode, I was like, yeah, I'm never going to play that.
Yeah, it's not great. Considering the Battlefront 2 had great story stuff, like the first Battlefront 2.
The original Battlefront 2.
the new Battlefront was just, it was disappointing to not have that kind of thing. But they're fixing that, so hopefully the story mode's all right.
Yeah, so they took a step back between Battlefront 2 1 and Battlefront 1 2, and now on Battlefront 2 2, they're improving it again.
Sure.
Great naming, guys, by the way. Just top notch.
Yeah. So I played that, and then I played one more game. I played some PUBG. We didn't record earlier today because I was on a hot streak with my squad. We won 3 in a row and then got 2nd in the 4th and then like a 5th after that. So we were very, very successful today. I was on a bunch of killing spree. One of them was just going around just like murdering people nonstop. It was great.
Very nice.
Mm.
Well, I have, in the last week at least, been playing almost exclusively on the Switch, because after the cavalcade of 18 games that came out last week, not as many this week, but they were all bangers. So I have been rotating between Golf Story, which continues to be fantastic. Also, I didn't realize, but it's developed by an Australian team. And from someone who has finished the game, like, as I mentioned, there's sort of a little overworld map that you move between the different regions. It turns out at the end of the game, it pans out to show the full overworld map, and it's a tiny version of Australia.
That's pretty cool.
Complete with Tasmania. I mean, the region climates and environments don't match up, but it's very clearly the shape of Australia, which is just a nice little touch. So I've been playing a bit more of that, but the other two games that came out this week that I immediately bought the moment they launched in both cases, Axiom Verge, which is an excellent Metroidvania game that was originally launched on PC, it's kind of Super Nintendo era pixel art kind of thing as far as the look. But has this cool kind of layer of mechanics. It's the usual, you know, sort of run, jump, shoot. Try not to get hit or you'll die very quickly. But there's all these glitches in the world. So there'll be areas that you can't pass through because it's glitched, like an emulator can't figure out which pixel tile to drop. And you get abilities where you can sort of double tap against that and you sort of glitch through the wall. Or you have a ray that you can shoot that can glitch out enemies. So, for instance, there was an enemy that kind of looks like a rhino that shoots gas out of its back. And if you leave it as is, there's only one type of ammo that can hit it. But you have to get it really close and risk getting hit by the gas. But if you sort of glitch it out, it becomes vulnerable to any weapon. other enemies, like if you glitch them out, they'll always drop health, which is very helpful. And then, yeah, the bosses are just these like huge, elaborate pixel art things. So yeah, I'm really enjoying it. I started it on PC way back in the day, but I think just being on PC, it was too much work to sit down, plop myself in front of this game, get frustrated after a few minutes and go do something else. So having it on the Switch where I can pick it up and put it down is much more advantageous.
So you can pick it up, play it for 2 minutes, get frustrated and put it down.
Exactly, but I'm not having to go set up in front of my PC. I can literally do that on the couch while the TV show is paused or something.
And then you can resume 2 minutes later watching the TV show.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm quite enjoying that. It's a bit of a hefty price tag on it. I mean, not hugely hefty, $27 for Australia, but it felt like a bit of an ask having already bought the game. Mm. But I think if you're going into it fresh, it's not unreasonable.
I mean, that's a problem that all video games have, especially the worst one ever was GTA. So bring out GTA 5 on 360 and PS3, then you can buy it on PS4 and Xbox One, and you can then buy it on PC after that. That is, yeah, that's kind of a fuck you move. But I feel like they could have done some sort of deal with people that already owned it, something like that.
I mean, that kind of cross-platform discounting is hard to do, but at least for like PS3 to PS4, there should have been an upgrade method.
The thing is, you have to go into a Rockstar account to play online for all three cases. And this is another problem I have with the GTA games, is that you can't have a shared character over all the platforms. So presumably they all have the same statistics and all that sort of stuff, but you have to actually splinter the character off physically, and then anything you gain in one character will not update in the other character. I don't know why they do that. I don't know why they're pulling from the same databases. Why can't you just pull like and share the data like that, so your character is the same across all platforms? I don't know why. It seems beyond me. I find that to be a massive problem.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to get to my third Switch game, but that actually leads me on to something I was going to discuss. The folks at Five Star Games were kind enough to send a copy of Minecraft Story Mode Season 2 from Telltale for PS4 over for me. I started that game on PC, but as with many games, my computer struggles sometimes. And from playing Guardians of the Galaxy on PS4, it just looks nicer there. So I've been trying to get the friggin' Telltale cloud save bullshit to work. And not going well. It won't. Like, I've moved between Mac and PC. I've moved another game between PC and PS4. This one just refuses to translate. For one thing, there's no indication on PS4 that cloud save is turned on in this game. All of the on-screen prompts for support point to random websites on Telltale's homepage. Mm-hmm. Some of them point to support pages for Minecraft Season 1, which is not helpful. It's meant to be you sign into your Telltale account, and it just happens. The first save slot is always reserved for cloud save, but there's nothing happening on the PS4. I was able to bring in my save from Season 1 randomly after trying for a day and a half. But that still means that the first episode of the second season that I've played through, it's not getting recognized. And I know the episodes aren't long, but just the principle of having to replay the game. Like, imagine if I'd gotten up to Season 2, Episode 3 out of 5, and then had to transfer over. That's just nonsense.
Yeah, a bit annoying.
So I'm having a bit of back and forth with Telltale support to try and get that sorted out, because I do want to play the game. I don't want to replay that game.
Yeah.
So yeah, that might be something I'm playing next week if the next reply to my support ticket gets a good response.
Considering the Telltale games are all story, they don't have a huge replayability. Even with the ability to make different choices, it's a slog to go through because it's all exposition, it's all story.
And unlike a lot of games which have a lot of story, a lot of exposition, there's no way to skip through dialogues other than pre-knowing which conversation choice you want to make and hitting it at the start of the countdown timer instead of at the end.
All cutscenes, all things ever should have a skip.
Yeah. Honestly, I transferred my Game of Thrones Telltale save over no trouble. This one just not playing nice.
There's got to be some sort of weird bug with it and not
there's
doing it.
There's got to be. Anyway, more fun news. The last game I've been playing on Switch is the most recent one to release on Switch as far as I care, Stardew Valley.
Ooh.
It looks really good on a little portable screen. I like it. It
looks good on my big monitor.
It looks really good on my 55-inch TV. Just the crisp pixel graphics that have blown up with that kind of high quality image. Oh, it's good. And I mean, the Switch has an OLED screen, I think. So it looks nice on there. But yeah, another game that's really good for bite-sized play. From all indications, it's the most up-to-date version of Stardew Valley. As opposed to, you know, Minecraft, which is unavailable on every platform, but they're always staggered as far as which update they're up to.
Yes. Considering Microsoft own all of them, you would think that they would sort that shit out.
Yeah. Also, weirdly, Minecraft is available on 3DS now.
Yeah, I saw that it launched the other week.
Is bizarre. I mean, I know it's not a graphically intense game, but you're still talking about a very large worldscape, which I don't understand how well that could work. Or
well,
how
there's a mobile version as well.
Yeah,
and
wasn't
it's massively
Minecraft Pocket
down.
Edition unofficial? Yeah.
It was like some sort of... It was some sort of weird version of it, but it was way cut down, so you could walk from one side of the world to the other in a minute. Like, it was not big in any way. And there's restrictions on what you could do in it as well.
Yeah. So, yeah, luckily Stardew is not beholden to that same kind of staggered update release, I think. In fact, they've said that when the multiplayer update releases next year sometime, the Switch will be the first console to get it.
Which we discussed and pissed me off.
Unsurprisingly.
Well, I mean, okay, so the game's come out, it came out February-ish last year. It's been out for 18 months. I just feel like if you don't at least do it at the same time, it just feels like, oh, well, okay, so we've been left behind in some way. Like, I've literally, two friends of mine actually and myself all have the game and we've been waiting and waiting and waiting for multiplayer to come out. My friends like check in with me to see if multiplayer's out yet. And I say no. So, I mean, this is something literally we have been waiting. We were told very early on that there would be multiplayer and to know that like, oh yeah, by the way, you're not going to get it before the other, like other people that, you know, other people will be able to get on, you'd be able to get on the Switch. That's fine. But the home of the game won't get it.
Yeah. Well, I'm okay with it. Personally, I'll probably never take advantage of it.
That's the thing that pisses me off even more. I know that I will play it.
Well, you know what, Cliff? Go buy a Switch, and early next year, we can get together and play it.
I already own the game.
So
this,
did I.
This is not, I'm not doing this bullshit GTA 5 thing again.
Yeah, to be fair, though, compared to Axiom Verge, the upgrade cost was pretty low. Stardew, $17.
See, that's an absolute bargain for Stardew Valley.
For a meaty game like Stardew compared to a lot of the indies that are on there for the same price, I was really impressed. Especially when they came out saying the US price was $15. Straight away my brain went, okay, Australia will get it for like $25, $27.
Yeah.
But nope, they announced it, released it 2 days later, within a couple of dollars of the American price. I was very happy. So I started my farm. I'm like only 10 days in. Got my cat. His name's Gordon. I had a cat named Gordon once upon a time. Started planting things, exploring, already found areas that I'd never even went to in the time I played it on PC.
There's lots of things to discover in the game.
Oh, not even hard to find things. Like, south of your farm, past the forest, there's the outlet drain where there's sludge coming out. I'd never been there before.
Wow, have you actually been inside of that? Oh, you've never...
No.
So, there's actually another entrance as well.
The sewer grate in the city?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I've seen that. I don't know how to get into it yet.
Oh, okay, right.
So, yeah, I'm just sort of wandering around. I mean, does Stardew actually have any kind of deadline in the way the Harvest Moon games typically did?
So, it does effectively like the same thing. You have 3 years or something like the spirit of your granddad's... your granddad will come back and visit you on X day 3 years later. And you'll get kind of
assessed.
Oh, yeah,
I found a plaque.
Yeah.
It says, like, I'll visit you at the start of your third year. Yeah,
that's in
so that's
the
it?
Northwestern part of your farm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a little altar thing there, and it'll assess you on how well you do over that time, how successful you are, that kind of junk.
Okay.
So
is it just an assessment, or is there so there's no real sort of pass-fail situation?
No, it just tells you how well you did in that period of time, and then you can keep playing on for as long as you want afterwards.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, just like Harvest Moon, but better, because it seemed like Nintendo didn't really know, or whoever's developing it didn't really know what to do with Harvest Moon. They just made the same thing, but not as good every time.
Oh, now I'm going to have to look that up because I know that the studio that developed Harvest Moon started with an H, I think.
It just seemed like the first Harvest Moon I played, because I played a bunch of them after that as well. The first one I played was the best, and they just degenerated after that, it seemed.
Yeah, I think the first one I ever played was the PS1, which was basically a port of the SNES version. That was solid. No, Harvest Moon is Natsume. Why was I thinking H? I don't know.
Because Harvest Moon starts with H.
Yeah, there's a developer that starts with H, I'm pretty sure, and their logo is a bee, like a bumblebee. And that's what I'm trying to say.
You're not making sense there, my friend.
No. All right, well, I'll investigate that on my own time. But Stardew Valley, very much enjoying it. I like the speed of the days. Also, not having any sort of concrete goal time, where I think some of the Harvest Moon games is like, you have to have your farm like profitable by X day. And I hate that kind of time restriction stuff. So having it's like, hey, we'll check in 3 years, but otherwise just chill, do whatever you want, is pretty good. Although I did forget that the time ticks on even when I'm in my house and passed out next to my bed at one point because I got distracted talking to someone. Yeah, so I'm enjoying that. I'm looking forward to having that for my international flights at the end of the year and also just queues at PAX, to be honest.
I haven't quite figured out what we're going to do it in the queues at PAX. Yeah, I'll figure something out. I've got a bunch of devices that have various things installed on them.
Load up a tablet with like a bajillion comics or something.
Well, I'm thinking I'm just going to literally just bring a massive book. Just read that. I've also got my Vita. I can also play that.
Yeah, after all the fanfare about the SNES Mini coming out last week, I pulled out my PSP Go, which a friend sold to me pre-homebrewed with every NES game, every SNES game, every Mega Drive game, every Game Boy game, every Game Boy Color game, every Game Boy Advance game. And it's nice. It's nice and compact. It has that nice kind of snap when you pop it open. Ah, I love it. God, what a great device that really was never given time to shine. Plus, it's a tiny screen, so all those pixel games look really good.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. PSP Go. You know what you should do when you release a device like 2 weeks before the new Kingdom Hearts game comes out? Never release the Kingdom Hearts game in digital form so all those PSP Go early adopters can't get it.
Yeah.
What's that? Like the biggest draw game that your device is ever going to get? Yeah, better not make that available.
Why would you make games available? That's just why, crazy indeed. Talk.
There's a reason that PlayStation don't have an active mobile device.
Despite having great devices.
Yeah, they do. They do a good device. You know what else? The unrelated topic connection. Things that happened this week.
Lots of things happened this week.
Lots of things happened this week. But I've just got a highlight list because I have more packing to do.
All right, let's quickfire Cuphead news then.
Yes, let's pretend we're going to quickfire news. Cuphead came out. Which I'm happy about because that game has been in dev hell for millions of years. I will never ever buy that game.
It is a very frustrating looking game.
Yes, it is bullet hell and unforgiving platformer and pattern recognition gaming sort of refined to a T, which I would have happily bought that game and played it, just throwing my head against it over and over again until I succeeded when I was 10. And I couldn't afford other games. But at this stage, when I have so many choices and can just go play something else instead, I'm not going to do that. Like, I don't enjoy games that are just relentlessly hard for the sake of being relentlessly hard.
Which is pretty much why, while nostalgia will sell things like the NES and SNES Minis, those games, most of them don't hold up because they're just, like head-smashing. You just don't have the attention span or the free time to sit down and play it for 5-6 hours. Starting from Saturday morning at 7 a.m.
My gaming sessions are a lot more compact as well. I need the ability to just hit pause and resume at a later stage, which is why things like the suspend function on consoles and the 3DS and the Switch are amazing for me, because I play on public transport and, over lunch or, for short bursts because I have a terrible attention span.
Even in games that are actually on the console or on PC, most of them had checkpoints every 5 seconds now anyway.
Exactly. So if you have to backtrack, you're not backtracking much. The Telltale games are really good for that. Almost every 5 minutes you have a checkpoint save established that never saves to cloud save. But anyway, it's got you covered there.
Quick phone news. It looks fun. It looks great on a old black and white CRT. There's a video that came out on that. Yeah. It looks just like the old cartoons, which it's based on. Amazing.
It looks beautiful. There is a black and white mode you can play the game in as well, which I really love.
Oh, cool.
Although the kind of semi-washed out animation colors look fantastic. I will never play that game, but I love looking at screenshots and video of it. And then getting to remember that other people are suffering for it. There were two trailers that came out for entertainment media this week that were of note, in reverse order of both release and amount I care about them. Pacific Rim Uprising.
Yep, I watched it. I was actually surprised by how much I enjoyed the first one. I expected it to be a piece of shit. But it was actually alright. It was dumb fun, but it was good dumb fun because it's giant robots.
I watched the original Pacific Rim when I had a half day to kill after a PAX that year, and I had time to kill before my flight. So I bought a ticket online, realized I was like three main roads away from the cinema compared to where I thought I was, had to sprint for it, and then spent the first 30 minutes of the movie sort of wishing I could just take off my shirt to try and cool down because I'd sprinted the entire way. Mm. But the movie in between that was very, very good.
Yeah.
Just cheesy, schlocky good times.
Yep.
The trailer for this one looks kind of like a cartoon almost in how kind of just unabashedly fun it is.
It looks also, like...
John Boyega.
Well, I mean, I could pass or, you know, whatever on him. He's not a selling point for the movie itself for me. Mm. But it looks like they're going to be fighting... looks like there's going to be a lot of infighting with Jaegers. So Jaeger versus Jaeger action from the trailer.
Yeah.
And also and Kaiju. So I'm assuming...
Hyper Kaiju or something, yeah.
I'm assuming what's going to happen is that now that the big world threat's over, we devolve back into our, like, states of power. And then they start fighting each other using these great new weapons everyone developed together. And then, while we're busy punching the shit out of each other, more Kaiju show up, but it's like ultra, mega, super Kaiju. Fun, happy hour. And then they have to unite again under... John Boyega and Mako, who's in it.
John Boyega, who I'm pretty sure is playing Idris Elba's son.
He is. He's a Pentecost. Yeah. He's got a very boring name. His dad had a great name, Stack of Pentecost, and he's got a boring name like Jake.
Jake Pentecost.
Yeah. But Mako's going to be in it, so that's great. No, what's his face, Charlie Man? He's going to be in it.
Who's he who was in Tron Legacy?
Nah, he's from Sons of Anarchy.
Okay.
I think that's him, isn't it?
Yeah, that actually sounds familiar now.
So he's not back, but the Charlie Day and the other scientist look to be back as well. So.
Charlie Day and I don't know what his real name is, Owen from Torchwood.
Sure. Weird British guy.
Yep.
Yep.
Who was playing like a weird German guy? Wasn't he German in the movie?
I don't think he was. I think he was still British, but he was like super weird.
Yeah. Maybe that's just why I assume he was German.
Hmm.
Oops, that's racist. So that's a trailer that came out. I look forward to seeing it. But more importantly for me, the trailer for Runaways came out. Marvel's Runaways.
Oh, I haven't actually seen that one.
Oh, it's really good. Runaways, as we've previously discussed, was one of the first comics I ever read that actually got me excited about comics. It was a really early 2000s kind of story. And in the trailer, I noticed they've pulled some direct lines. The general gist of it is these kids are forced to meet up once a year when all their parents get together for a barbecue or whatever, and they have to hang out with these other kids they hate. One year they finally sort of try and find out what their parents get up to, find a secret door where their parents are actually sacrificing a young girl to an elder god to gain power, and it turns out that all of their parents are supervillains, the Pride. So... they run away and become superheroes. But in the comics, when they find the secret door that leads to the murder chamber, I guess, one of the characters said, and bearing in mind this is early 2000s, that's some Narnia shit right there. And that exact line gets replicated in the trailer, which honestly makes me pretty happy.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure that type of line has been used in, like, nonstop since then anyway.
Oh, so, yeah, it's never really died, but it was just so clunky and, like, sort of edgy teen that I loved it. It seems like it's going to be a pretty accurate representation of the comics. One of the characters has a genetically engineered dinosaur that she's psychically linked to, and that's in the trailer, so wicked. Yeah, it's coming out November on Hulu. So I don't know what availability is going to be like for Australia.
I won't be watching it then.
There's definitely no way to watch that media. But I'm still excited because this is one of those projects, much like American Gods, that's just been in development hell for pretty much since the comic was actively releasing. So they're finally getting it done. And Good Omens is coming, and they've cast the leads as well, which makes me very excited that all these like slow burn projects.
But it's not coming for a long, long time yet.
They've got people in costume. That's closer than I've ever got.
I've read a date that was like late 2018, early 2019. So it's not coming for a long time.
That's cool. Like, I've got stuff to do between now and then. Just knowing that it's finally happening is enough for me. Also the fact that Crowley is being played by David Tennant.
The problem is there's all these great shows that are coming out, but they're all coming out so far apart that they're all going to hit at the same time. So Westworld, Game of Thrones, this. There's not actually going to be anything in between. Because they're all extending out and taking longer. I don't want this to become a trend where they start taking 18 months, 2 years to release a season of a show. Bad. Bad, bad, bad.
In a way, I'm okay with it because in between the TV onslaught, I can deal with the video game onslaught. I can just sort of, every 6 months, rotate my primary focus of just exhaustive watching.
All these good shows are only sort of 5, 10, possibly 13 episode seasons anyway, so they don't go for an entire year. So we only got 8 episodes of Game of Thrones, and then we have to wait a year and a half for a minimum thing. Same with Westworld, we've got 10 episodes of that, and now we have to wait a million years. Bad. Mm-hmm. Stop doing that. It's only 8 episodes, 10 episodes. Give us the goods.
As long as you keep making my media, I can live with it. Also, nice side effect to Runaways coming back as a TV show is that they've restarted the comic, which is fantastic because that's been gone since, I think, the original Marvel Civil War. So we're talking at least 10 years.
That's like 2006, 7?
Yeah, I'm thinking 2006 was Civil War 1. So, and it's the original team as well. It's not just, the name taken for new characters, which makes it very exciting for me because it was one of my formative comics.
Well, is it in one of the greater universes or is it its own self-contained thing?
It's Marvel Prime.
Ah, okay, right.
But, whatever they call it, 616,
I'm assuming they're going to separate. It's not going to be actually linked to the modern...
Oh, no, like the characters after they broke up, the Runaways, they were threaded through different stories.
The TV show, though, they're not actually...
Oh, the TV show. The Runaways, the original series was based in LA, sort of away from everywhere else that's kind of currently active in the TV shows.
Basically, it's away from New York.
Yeah, pretty much. They have mentioned there'll be, sort of nods and stuff like that. I think it's going to be more actively nodding than... like S.H.I.E.L.D. does, but I don't know how much. But their story is pretty self-contained anyway. I think the only crossover they really had in their original run was they did go to New York at one point and they ran into Cloak and Dagger, which is another TV show that's coming that I keep forgetting about. Man, they're killing it.
Considering they're making them all on different things, I wouldn't hold your breath for crossovers.
Yeah. Although that's actually a pretty neat segue into another Marvel show that just launched this week, The Gifted.
Mm-hmm. Which was great.
Which is basically X-Men.
Yeah.
Being on Fox, they're kind of away from all the restrictions of the general Marvel MCU stuff. They can name any mutants they want. They can say the word mutants. It looks pretty promising. And some big name mutants in there, like Polaris and Blink.
What I found most interesting about this show is that I reckon it's totally in the Logan timeline, because they mentioned the X-Men are gone and have been gone for a while.
Yeah, the X-Men and the Brotherhood are both gonzo.
Yep, and they got the government trying to like find and contain mutants and stuff like that, so it does give a very pre-Logan-y kind of feel, which I think is awesome. Yeah.
They've kind of hinted that whatever caused the X-Men and the Brotherhood to disappear has put a real stink on sort of the public perception of mutants in general, which is why they're basically being arrested for being mutants.
Mm-hmm.
The whole hook of the show is the dad, who is Vampire Bill from True Blood, and his wife, who is Fred from Buffy and Angel.
Just Angel. She was never in Buffy.
I thought she was in Buffy a couple times. No,
she came in partway through Angel. Okay. She might have visited or whatever, but she was not a Buffy character. She was a Heartgrow Angel. Yeah.
Well, okay. Well, yeah. So Fred and Vampire Bill have kids. Vampire Bill works for the government agency that tracks down mutants.
He's a lawyer in that thing, so he deals with the actual
He's a cases. Mutant prosecutor. Yeah. So they show him after they capture one of the mutants, kind of putting the pins to her. And then it turns out that both of his kids are mutants. And
boy, is that awkward.
Yeah. So the big government agency, Sentinel Services, nice little nod there, start chasing them down. So they have to go to the Mutant Rebellion, what's left after the X-Men and Brotherhood kind of disappeared, and try and stay safe that way.
Yeah, it's classic X-Men type stuff. It's nothing groundbreaking. It's, oh, look, there's a mutant and something happens and they accidentally use their power. And so, you know, government bigwigs come in and try and control them and then try and take them by force. And then, of course, they don't want to be taken by force. They just want to kind of be left alone. And so they use their powers to get out of these things. And the government says, look, they're dangerous. They attacked us. It's like, well, no. Yeah. So that's the, it's the classic, like, it's no different to any other X-Men story like on that front. But it's a cool twist on the whole, they're on the run post X-Men, so there's no X-Men around to save the day or anything like that. There's no Brotherhood to go to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oops. Yeah, so you did ding very bad.
I forgot to turn it off. Stop!
Someone's Mr. Popular.
It's got my ringer mode button's not on the thing.
Hey, professional, Cliff. Come on. Okay.
It's, the ring is off now.
Okay. Yeah, so I think it's promising. Definitely feels more promising than Inhumans did, which also I watched the third episode of that, and it doesn't get better.
I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah, I needed something to watch over lunch, and I was like, ugh, all right, I guess. Yeah. So some of them still can't act, Crystal. Yeah, Medusa's most interesting character trait continues to be her shaved head. Yeah.
But she did stab up a bitch, so she's won me on that front.
Yeah, that's true. Black Bolt's still pretty interesting. The guy who's playing him is very good at non-verbal acting, which is nice.
He's the best part of that entire show, for sure.
Yeah. Also some cute moments with Karnak this episode as well, which I won't spoil for you. Yeah, so Inhumans I'll stick with because I think it's 10 episodes. By the time I finish it, it'll be cancelled anyway, so may as well. Gifted, though, seems pretty interesting, and it's just nice having mutants that I actually recognize instead of having to scrape the bottom of the barrel. Yeah, so that's that. In other Marvel news, less good Marvel news, there was a bit of controversy about an announcement made during the week leading up to New York Comic Con. Marvel announced a tie-in comic between sort of Marvel characters and Northrop Grumman, which is a real-world defense contractor. The number 5 most sort of active defense contractor in the world who do a lot of work for the US government. And they were doing a tie-in comic where it was like a team of Northrop Grumman people working with superheroes that immediately got bombed because, hey, you know what's a good idea? Promoting like war profiteering to children. Oh, wait, no, that's a terrible idea.
I just don't like this kind of bullshit product placement, full stop. Like, don't leave the real world shit out of it. Like, don't do tie-ins just for advertising purposes. Like, and then on top of that is the, like, look, yeah, war is good. No. Not
good. Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I did get some entertainment out of the Marvel X Tsum Tsum crossover. Those, like, tube pillows that are shaped to look like superheroes and crap, because it was just ridiculous. But this one is ridiculous in a non-fun way. I'm a little disappointed, though, because the only art they released was the cover, and the team of sort of action scientists they had from NGEN, which was the, you know, forced shortened name for the Northrop Grumman people, it was really diverse, like, as far as sort of race and gender and all this stuff. And action scientists are great, because that's why I read Atomic Robo. But the fact that it's then tied to real world people who make drones and missiles and stuff like that, not great.
Yeah, I just hate all these kind of crossovers. They're all stupid.
They pulled the plug on that very quickly. The comic run has been cancelled, as has the event that they were going to hold at New York Comic Con in conjunction with Northrop Grumman. So
good.
Good fix, Marvel. Bad choice to begin with.
Speaking of New York Comic Con, so this one, I know why it happened. It's very, very obvious why it happened. If I was at New York Comic Con, I would feel ripped off.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons, the Punisher panel was pulled.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, I know why it's happened. If I was there, like, I'm all about the Marvel TV shows. I love the Punisher. He's great. If I was there and it got pulled, I would be disappointed that it got pulled.
Yeah.
I feel like they could have done something to... They could have basically just come and said, obviously, this has a real old link at the moment. It's a very sensitive thing. Scale it down. Be like, we're not sensationalizing anything. There is some stuff we're going to show, blah, blah. And basically just rein it right in. And just basically make it like, we're not going to make any sort of like pomp and circumstance out of it. But here's the stuff we have for the show. And just do something about it instead of just pulling the whole thing. Because, yeah, I'd feel pretty ripped off.
I
know exactly why. It's not surprising at all why it got pulled.
Oh, yeah. Really, you couldn't not pull it after the events in Las Vegas. I can understand disappointment. I think the best thing you could do in this situation is, yes, definitely, pull the panel. Don't cover that particular Marvel property in the climate we're in right now, especially considering all the related political debate going on with America still refusing gun control. But we're not going to get into that because we had that rant in person the other day. Mm-hmm. The best thing you can do is kind of any kind of new trailers or whatever you're going to release, publish them online with associated links to kind of relief support things. Say, hey, here's the trailer. Sorry we had to cancel the event. Please give money because people need it. It's understandable. It's a disappointment, but it's really the only way it could be played.
I think they probably could have done something there instead of just pulling it completely and shutting it straight down. I think they still could have done something there. They literally could have gone like, okay, this happened, and straight up gone like, okay, here's like, we've set up a fund or whatever for things. You can like go to right now. They still could have, I think, done something. I think just cutting it completely is like I said, I would be kind of pissed if I was there because that'd be one thing I wanted to see. I think they still could have done something, but they could have just reined it right in and straight up gone and been like, obviously this has happened. This is why it's not going to be a full panel like we did before, and still done something there. Still had some kind of event.
I think cancelling the event entirely, the kickback you get from that is always going to be less than the kickback from any modified version you do. So as a business, they're better to not take the risk. And I can respect it. So, yeah. I haven't actually seen any other news really coming out of Comic-Con so far. I saw they had the costumes for Justice League and stuff on display, but I haven't really heard anything else being announced there. And NYCC tends to be pretty big as far as announcements go.
Yeah, it's been weird. I didn't actually even know it was on until I heard about this. I don't really know what the hell has been going on
there. Yeah, usually you get the teasers for the teasers for the trailers that are going to be released at the event, but there hasn't really been any of that.
I mean,
I guess maybe that's right where Runaways came.
We're right up on Thor. As if they're not doing a big Thor thing there.
I think I've seen there was a published final trailer on YouTube for Thor, which had a couple of new cute moments that really put me in a good mood for this movie in 2 weeks. But moving on, those aren't really important to talk about. I want to talk about one other trailer that came out this week for a game that is already 2018's Game of the Year in everyone who has taste's mind. It is Untitled Goose Game.
I heard about this game. It's just become like an instant, almost basically a meme overnight.
Kind of. So Untitled Goose Game is the newest game from the team who developed Push Me, Pull You, which was a game on, I think, PC and PlayStation 4, which was about basically cat-dog people, where there's a person on each end. They can grow or shrink their body, and they have to sort of compete against another cat-dog person to get the ball onto their side of the court to win points.
Wrestle each other in a variety of creepy and hilarious ways.
Yeah, kind of wrap around each other. It's a very simple game, but the sound effects are just utterly upsetting. the little tap 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 of their hands as they drag themselves around, and the stretch and shrink sound.
Speaking of sound effects, sound effects were the creepiest part of what was the dick game?
A genital jousting.
Yes, that was the sounds were by far the most obscene part of that game.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So yeah, Untitled Goose Game. It's basically a game where you're a goose in this kind of top-down, isometric-looking world, all very kind of simple, unlined, vectorized graphics kind of thing. You're basically a goose who's just causing trouble.
You're an asshole of a goose.
Yes. Oh, I'm going to try and bring up the trailer because the description they had on it was pretty much exactly all you needed to know about the game. But yeah, so in this trailer, the goose kind of goes around. The first thing it does is it comes out of the water. There's a little farm with a gardener. The goose runs up, steals the farmer's sandwich, and then goes and drops it in the water. So you are just an arsehole. And then he's sort of running around. You can honk because you're a goose, and what else are you going to do? And just generally cause trouble. At one point, you've got to try and trigger the hose to get the gardener wet, steal his hat so he has to put on his sun hat, all these weird little tasks. Here we go. The exact description for the trailer, the only line, is, "It's a lovely weekday morning in the village, and you are a horrible goose." And it's a simple
idea.
It just looks beautiful. They show at the very end of the trailer that there's two geese as well, so there'll be some sort of multiplayer mode. I think the best part is, yeah, you can sort of do stealth, like climb into bushes so the gardener can't chase you off. But then also you can just run at him and just go honk, 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 and he kind of runs away because birds are scary, horrible monsters.
In my mind, I've just got this image of like, this just sounds like two super drunk girls being assholes because they know they can get away with it because they're girls. And I've known these girls. So yeah, it just seems like the antics, the drunken asshole antics of, you know, two girls that are, I think it's hilarious to them, not hilarious to anyone else outside of those two.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, I've known girls that do that stuff. And thinking back on it, it is quite funny, but at the time, like, assholes. Absolute assholes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. But yeah, this game looks like a lot of fun. Just all the weird little tasks you've got to do and the way that they're going to let you do them. One of the tasks they show in the trailer on your little sort of goose to-do list is have a picnic, which basically means stealing all the food of the farmers and dropping it on a picnic blanket. So I'm really looking forward to this, and it would work on pretty much any system. I can't wait. All they've said is it's coming next year, so I have no idea when exactly that'll be, but this is, I mean, it's not even got a title at this point, so who knows.
Maybe it's just called Untitled Goose Game.
I would be fine with that. That's a very distinct name. It's better for SEO than naming your movie It, for one thing. But yeah, so that's something to look forward to next year. That's all I've got, though.
I had one more little thing, just trying to think. We spoke last week about, or the week before perhaps, about the Star Trek Discovery. The weird designs of the Klingons. And you mentioned that you weren't a fan of the four nostrils, right?
No, not really.
Klingons have had four nostrils since, like, Next Generation. And I didn't remember this. I went back and watched DS9. So I went back and watched the first few episodes. And speaking of drunk female pests, the Lursa and Bator, the perpetual Klingon pests of the Klingon Empire, always trying to fuck shit up and get their own way. The makeup on them, it has like a weird like ridge, like second ridge on their nose. And if you look at a bunch of them, it looks like some of them are very... just looks like a little ridge, a closed ridge. But some of the makeup looks distinctly like extra nostrils on it.
Okay, yeah, I can kind of see it.
So it just seems like they've taken it and made it more pronounced.
I don't remember ever seeing that on like the makeup that Worf wore, though.
Well, some of the Klingons have it, and some of them are very pronounced, some of them aren't. Because I did a search to have a look at it. But it seems like some of them have multiple nostrils, it seems.
Okay, I mean, yeah, looking at some photos of Worf, he does have kind of a ridge above his nostril, which I guess you could read as a secondary nostril, but it just looks like ridges.
Mm. But then, like, yeah, like some of the other Klingons, the makeup very much looks like extra nostrils.
Interesting.
Yeah. This doesn't change the fact that the Klingon design is super weird. I'm not a fan, but...
Yeah, not really.
I put on DS9 and I just looked and went, holy shit, four nostrils.
Yeah, weird choice, guys.
Yep. Also, those two Klingon sisters, holy crap. They are absolute pests in this Star Trek universe. Absolute pests. Starting civil wars and teaming up with the Romulans. They're the worst.
I'm enjoying Star Trek Discovery though, despite the Klingon makeup.
Yeah, I'm still undecided. It still is not, doesn't remind me of Star Trek really at all.
Well, we're only three episodes in. They've finally gotten onto the actual ship, so maybe now we'll see some stuff going on.
Yeah, we'll see.
But I think for this week that will just about do us here at the Indoorsman. Thank you as always for listening to your weekly dose of us complaining about things and getting angry at cloud saving.
Well, you got angry at cloud saving.
Yeah. If you'd been through what I've been through, if you'd seen what I'd seen.
Don't you worry. If I got burned by it, I would be on the tallest hill I could find with a series of megaphones, Bart style, and everyone's ears would be ringing. Basically, our intro and outro music, like it was last week, is again Fuck Sidechain Compression on Game Boy by Rocco W. It's still great, so definitely check out his stuff on Bandcamp and all the usual places like that to get it.
As always, you can find us at indoorsmanpodcast.com or at indoorsmanpod on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, because unified branding is a thing that we definitely did right from the start and didn't have to fix halfway through.
Yeah.
So go to those channels and talk to us or at us and look at the cover art on Instagram because it's very good.
If you want to tweet at us, you can get myself at Cliff Van Monkey and Matt at Ponk. Or if you'd like to send us an email, you can get us at contact@indoorsmanpodcast.com.
Exactly. We'd also love it if you could subscribe, review, and rate the show on iTunes or your podcast medium of choice. It makes us feel good about ourselves, and that's something that some of us need when we're giving away all our material possessions, which is how we used to measure our worth. I have less stuff than I used to.
Got anything good I can take?
Do you want a bag of Nerf guns?
Not really.
Probably, yes. Almost definitely, yes, I have some stuff you can have. There's so much
Does
stuff,
Does it qualify
Cliff?
As stuff that I basically put under the heading of useless crap? It might be very pretty useless crap, but it's under the heading of useless crap.
There's definitely some useless crap. There's some pretty stuff that is kind of useless. I don't know that
All
I have much...
All forms of statues come under the heading of useless crap.
I have some Legos.
Okay, that is less useless crap, because that is definitely good because you can make it into other things.
Yes. Yeah, you know what? I'll make a pile. You can root through it and see if there's anything you want to keep to treasure my memory.
Yeah, yeah. I'll go through it like a hobo going through a bin.
But until we go through my what sounds less like a garage sale and more like a trash dive, I have been Matt.
And I've been Cliff.
And by endorsement tradition, we will send you off by saying something very funny about Cuphead.
I got nothing.
That game sounds steamboat shitty. Actually, no, it doesn't. It sounds really good. I just don't want to play it.
It sounds like 2D Dark Souls.
It sounds hard like my Steamboat Willy.
I'm assuming if you're gonna put that one in, you're gonna leave out the failed Steamboat one before that.
Oh no, definitely not.